Right back at it on the Fan inside the 8 o'clock hour tonight. I'm watching this, we'll get to it later. So at least in my mind, I wanted to start Mets, Yankees, local baseball. Coming up in about 10 minutes is Laura Albanese to talk Mets with us. And then I wanted to get into some hockey, Rangers, Isles with Johnny Lazarus. And by then, this Sixers Heat game will be over. And we'll start to talk more about the NBA, the play-in tournament. We can talk about Zion Williamson and LeBron James. We can talk about Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. Yikes. We can talk about who the Knicks are going to face. And if you didn't hear me the other night, I know WFAN put an article out about it. Shout out to Ryan, always listening to my show and writing up what I say. It's no time to be shook now. It's not time for cold feet for anybody that reps the Knicks, players, fans. And if you're a fan, just look at the players. They are not afraid of anyone. They do not fear whoever is going to be on the court with them. So you shouldn't have any fear. You're the number 2 seed. Whoever comes out of this matchup, you should beat in the first round. And you shouldn't be worried about getting knocked out in the first round. So 877-337-6666. We were talking Mets and Yankees. I was trying to look up, and maybe I'll find it. I was trying to look up the, okay, here it is. The Mets and Tyrone Taylor have settled at $2.025 million in avoided arbitration. And I'll just read some of the Mets fans' reactions. Who? 75-win team. I forgot this guy was even on the team. Who? Question mark. Who? Who? Someone put a who the F is that guy? The meme from Conor McGregor. Don't know who that is. Who are you? Oh, I guess they're going to give us the ring now. Like, I'm going back to show you that, like, when these marginal moves were made, a guy like Tyrone Taylor, who played for the Milwaukee Brewers, that David Stern knew who he was and knew that if he got an opportunity over here, he might actually make some noise. Well, Mets fans, you can delete some of those tweets, and it's okay. This is what we do as fans. We overreact, or if you don't know about a guy, you're just like, who, bum? This guy sucks. Never heard of him. I mean, this guy's balling. He's off to a great start as a Met, and he's becoming a fan favorite, you know. And he's doing something that Francisco Lindor isn't doing. And all the conversation in the beginning of the season, which is still the beginning, but that first week, Lindor is off to a slow start. He always starts slow. He's got to be better. He's got to be better. And yeah, he knows he has to be better. He knows he's Francisco Lindor, but it is a team game. Some of the lesser-known guys, no, most of the lesser-known guys are playing better and hitting better than Francisco Lindor, the highest-paid player on the team. Now, on the other side, with the Yankees, the highest-paid player on the team, Aaron Judge, he does not look right to me. I am so thankful. I literally was praying. Like, I was praying that he came through. I was praying that the game didn't end with Judge striking out again or Judge not coming through again, because the narratives would have been insane tonight. You know, even if he's not right, a broken clock is right at least 2 times a day. He came through. He won the game. A little RBI, RBI double or single, rather. Like, I just was relieved. Judge, yes, 6-4 Yankees, gets it done. Juan Soto's perfectly fine. They're going to have to pay Juan Soto whatever he would like. We all know it. He deserves it. I mean, this guy is different. But Judge batting behind him, man, Judge, the strikeouts, whether it's the ump, right, calling a ball low and inside a strike, taking a strike away from him or whatever. Man, Judge has not looked right at the plate. His timing looks off. He missed that strike three swinging against Gausman. He missed that slider by too much. And then the one before that, Gausman rang him up on a fastball right down the... So, Judge, I don't know if you're hurt. If you are hurt, I know you're not going to go on the IL, because we all had to go through last year without you. I know as the captain, as the leader, you want to be out there. You're not going to go on the IL. Hopefully this day off serves you well. But I hope the Yankees find ways to DH him or just give him a day off. Can we go up in this Rays series, maybe win the first 2 games, and then give Judge a day? Because I feel like he's got to be hurt. We knew he was hurt in spring training just a month ago, right? He doesn't look right. His timing looks off. He looks like a shell of himself. He looks like a different hitter. His approach looks different. And I think it's all connected, whether it's the toe, the oblique, the abs. Something is not right with Judge, but I am thankful that he came through to win the game for the Yankees today. Stay tuned for my Casamigos big shot of the night at 11 o'clock. Remington in Manhattan before we go to break. Go for it, Rem.
You know what's amazing? Telepathy, I don't know what it's called. But you can read my mind, because as I was telling your, I guess your colleague, producer, whomever,
yeah,
what I said was, Judge is hurt, and you don't really have to see too far. You're an athlete, so you can certainly relate to it much better than I am. I was never an athlete to begin with. I'm a sort of a nerd. But I will say, just looking at this, I was going to say, Keith, and you can elaborate on this, toe equals bad, oblique equals bad performance. It is physical. This is not mental with Judge. And you can elaborate further if you want. I'll hang up now and listen.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to be redundant, but it's the
no,
truth.
No, you're not redundant. And this is what we're doing. We're talking about it. Thanks for the call, Remington. I saw the topic was Judge. Now, I mean, there's only a couple things I could have guessed you were going to talk about, but I wanted to speak my piece on it, and you agreed, and I think a lot of us agreed. Whether I'm an athlete or not, I will say from my athletic experience, I've played hurt, and when you play hurt, you're trying to go out there and put on a front, but it's clear in your performance to see that you're not yourself. This is Aaron Judge. We watched this guy hit 62 home runs. We know what he looks like. We know what his at-bats look like. He's one of the most feared hitters in the world, maybe all time. And his at-bats look different. Like, I am not confident in him right now. But he came through because he's still Judge, right? So I don't know what it is, man, but Judge cannot, I don't know. He's not going to, we're in a weird position. He's not going to join, he's not going to go on the IL. He's on the team. He's not going to take himself out. He's not going to admit that he's hurt or he's ailing. He's just going to fight through it. But I fear that it gets worse, or I fear that his numbers are not going to reach Judge-like numbers where, man, it all starts to wear on you. It is all connected. The toe is your base. And I believe it's his plant foot, or maybe it's his back foot. I got to check. I don't know. But either way, everything starts from the bottom up, your base. So if your base isn't right and you're feeling that pain a little bit, and then that goes up your leg a little bit to your oblique when you're turning, and we already know he was spring beat up with the abs. Like, it is okay to say Judge does not look like himself, and I don't think that he's lost at the plate. This is a guy that hit 62 homers. This is a guy that now pitchers are challenging. They are not afraid of him. They were afraid of him just 2 years ago. They were walking him. They weren't giving him pitches to hit. Now he's looking at pitches in the zone, or the ump is calling strikes that are balls. And I don't know. We need Judge. He can't be a hole in the three spot. He can't be a $40 million hole in the lineup. The end. I love the guy like you guys love the guy. But he missed a chunk of spring training. And he's off to the slowest start of his career. And they're still winning. They're still the only team in baseball with 13 wins. They're still in first place. They have a bunch of dogs around him, and that's why the team feels Judge-proof. Man, what is it going to take for Judge to get right? If he's hurt, I don't know. They need to figure out some different type of treatment, the medical staff, whatever, accelerate something. I don't know, put something in his shoe. I don't know the answer. But I know, as a Yankee fan, watching these games, and I've watched probably thousands of Aaron Judge at-bats, he does not look like the same 99. I'm glad he changed his walk-up song back. I thought that had something to do with it. He started doing the swag surf. The stadium didn't sound right with the swag surf. Swag surf has to build. Man, I got that swag. My hat matches my bag. They don't know what I'm talking about. Somebody knows what I'm talking about. Judge is supposed to come up to, I'm the king of New York, Mello. He switched back to it, and it worked. Steven in Connecticut before we go to break. What's up, Steve?
Hey, what's up, Keith? Great show. Listen, we all talk about how the NFL doesn't give, you know, players enough safety, you know, with bad turf. And why did the Dodgers get a pass? They have a concrete step in the outfield.
Yeah, I'll never get over that. I'll never get over the Dodgers having
how,
that. Something should have been there. Somebody should have paid for that.
Excoriated.
Yeah, somebody should have paid for that, because that's a guy that we signed to a 9-year deal, $40 million a year, and running into the wall like that changed him.
Why is the national press not all over Manfred? Like, what's going on? Why is baseball management getting a pass?
They're covering up Ohtani right now. They easily cover up the whole wall thing.
Like, saying that, they definitely are.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they were easily like, oh, yeah, well, it could have happened to anyone, anywhere. It's just, no, that was stupid. There shouldn't be a concrete slab where these guys are running full speed to make plays. Anyway, it is what it is. It's just something we got to deal with. And he himself says he's got to manage this injury every day.
Baseball management should be ashamed of itself. The Los Angeles Dodgers management should be ashamed of itself. We are not taking care of the players. In 1956, Mickey Mantle put his knee into a drainage ditch, and that's us. That was on us. Like, why isn't this front page stuff? This is, I'm angry. But great show, man.
Thanks for the call, Steve. 877-337-6666. Two more sixes get you on. It's wide open. But I'm bringing in my first guest of the night. I've told you at least three times she was about to join us. I got to put out a tweet for her. I actually got to meet her at MLB Network on Off Base. She does great work. I always see her interviewing the Mets and the Yankees and reading her articles. And she was the first one to bring to my attention that there's this thing called the rally pimp that exists in Citi Field's fans now rooting for the Mets. And maybe this guy is the reason that they went 5-1. Let's take a break right here. We'll go get Laura Albanese, who writes for Newsday. This is Keith McPherson on the Fan. Don't go anywhere. We're right back after this. Keith McPherson on the Fan. This is KM to AM. Joining me right now is Laura Albanese, who writes for Newsday, covering your Mets, your Yankees, covering baseball. I had the pleasure of meeting Laura 2 years ago at MLB Network on the show Off Base, and I've been following her stuff ever since. Laura, are you there?
I am here, and thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. This rally pimp guy, I saw him on the broadcast, but I wasn't listening to the broadcast. And then I saw you wrote about him. I'm sorry, I can hear myself echoing, so maybe you're... Are you on speaker?
No.
Oh, I don't know. Are you listening to the radio?
No.
Okay,
Zoo, it's a mystery. Man, I don't know. Maybe I should go to another part of the apartment. Let's see.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hearing myself. I'm looking at Zoo. Zoo's like, she's on speaker. I'm like, I don't know. You said you're not.
No.
Okay. So I guess I got to just shut up and let you talk. Go for it.
I mean, sure. You know, I can talk for miles. So, yeah. So this dude, his name is Max Wiener. He's the rally pimp. And basically what happened, it was game 2 of a doubleheader early in April, and the Mets hadn't won yet. And they hadn't gotten a hit. Or they were like 1-for-24 or something absurdly bad. And they hadn't gotten a run in 2 games. And suddenly, like, out of nowhere, this dude who looks like he skinned a Muppet and put it on his back shows up on the scoreboard. And Pete Alonso hits a home run, and then somebody else hits a home run. And ever since then, they've been on fire. So, yeah, he became kind of like a little bit of a legend. His family has, like, a 20-pack of season tickets. And he thrifts all his clothes, and he's got, like, all these, like, really ostentatious coats and tracksuits.
Yeah, very bright.
Very bright.
Very 80s.
You know? Very 80s. He says it's like a Rick James, Elton John, David Bowie thing. And, yeah, so he's, everyone thinks, you know, that they're hitting and they're pitching better because of Mr. Rally Pimp, or Dr. Rally Pimp, as he likes to be called.
Dr. Rally Pimp. He's not actually a doctor, though.
No, he's a comedian.
I mean, whatever works. I said, you know, the Yankees have this dog thing going on. We've all run with that. Sometimes you just need a thing, something to believe in, something to change the vibes and the energy. And I know you can speak to the vibes and energy between the first homestand and the second one. Tell us just how it felt in Citi Field. I haven't been out there yet, but it was completely day and night. They go from 1-5 to 5-1.
I mean, day and night is the way I would describe it, too. I mean, it was like... And, you know, Mets fans, they can be a little bit morose, and understandably so. But it was like funereal.
Yeah. Mets fans?
Yeah. So they were like, it was like a funeral procession there the first week, you know. Once the losses started piling up, I mean, people were already talking like, oh, is Carlos Mendoza the right guy for this? And again, it's 5 games in. And then you go back and, you know, recently people are having fun. They're kind of like, they're doing like chest bumps in the outfield. People are laughing in the clubhouse, they're enjoying themselves, and yeah, the vibes are pretty immaculate right now. I mean, that's what it is when it comes to winning in New York. I think one of the things that a lot of people were wondering last year is like, okay, so this is supposed to be an incredible team, the highest payroll in baseball, what's off? And I can't say it's all chemistry because that's ridiculous. It's not all chemistry. They obviously had injuries and things didn't work out the way that it should. But chemistry does help. I do genuinely believe that. And so far, it looks like they're building something nice there in Flushing.
Yeah, I agree. I mentioned how the pictures came out of these guys all wearing blue Nike Tech suits as they're going on the road to L.A. So, like, a team that is willing to wear matching suits, like grown men, millionaires that are like, hey, yeah, let's all match. Like, there's something there. I heard a quote from Reed Garrett talking about how they all hang out, how they all talk together. Like, there's a good clubhouse vibe. He said, as a collective unit, we're all pretty close. We all talk to each other. We all hang out, mess around, play games in the club. So it's clearly a difference, right? We've heard over the last couple years that there was a cancer in the clubhouse and the clubhouse wasn't right and all these other things. So I think that's a huge part of it. I want to tip my cap to Carlos Mendoza and David Stearns for obviously Stearns putting together the right pieces and Mendoza talking to these guys and keeping these guys together early on when they could have just nosedived and they could have packed it in.
Yeah, and I think it's 100% true because, I mean, if you put yourself in Mendoza's shoes, you've been waiting for this opportunity basically your entire life. He's been a coach since, I think, 2009 in the Yankee system. So you finally get a chance to manage in New York, and you're losing your first five games. Most people would lose their cool in that situation, but he certainly didn't. He really, really kind of kept a steady hand, and I think that helped a lot. I think that kind of imbued a little bit more confidence in the guys around him. And the thing, you talk about chemistry, it's like, oh, you know, it's overblown in sports. And I do think it is a little bit overblown in sports. But one of the things that Reed Garrett said yesterday, post-game, he was like, well, you know, there's something concrete here. His splitter is better. His slider is better. He's been talking to Adam Ottavino. He's been, talking to Edwin Diaz. And when you have that sort of camaraderie where you can go up to somebody and be like, hey, am I holding this? Are my mechanics looking okay? How would you do this? How would you do this differently? And you can learn from them, then the entire team gets better.
Yeah, I think this guy is someone that deserves more talk, more light. Last year when he came up in July, he said, obviously I would like to have a little bit longer opportunity, but that's got to be earned. Looking forward to that opportunity to try and earn a longer stay. And I believe he came up right around the deadline once D-Rob was traded away. And it was quiet for him last year, but so far this year, I had a stat that I ripped from SNY Mets. They said Reed Garrett has struck out 17 of the 31 batters he's faced to start 2024. He's given them multiple innings of just pure dominance. It clearly looks like a guy that's ready to seize his opportunity this time around. And all offseason, I had said, one thing for sure is this Mets bullpen is going to be improved, and we're seeing that already.
Yeah, when David Stearns came in, one of the things about him, and I'm sure people have talked a lot about it, is that he's really good at bullpen construction. And we saw the issues with the Mets bullpen last year. Obviously, losing Edwin Diaz had a huge detrimental effect, but it also created a sort of like cascading situation in the bullpen where they were having to rely on, arms you wouldn't necessarily call high leverage arms in high leverage situations. So if the game was tight in the seventh or eighth inning, you were holding your breath the entire time because they just didn't have the personnel for it. Now you have, again, Reed Garrett's been doing great. Drew Smith has looked pretty unhittable, which last year he was good for the first half, not so great in the second half. And Ottavino's been doing a fine job, and Edwin Diaz is Edwin Diaz. And there was a slight downtick in Diaz's velocity, but there's not really any concern there because he's getting guys out. He looks like himself.
Yeah, Jorge Lopez, they don't even have Fujinami. Reed Garrett, going back to him, he didn't even make the opening day roster. I had another stat about him. He was a 16th-round pick. He was DFA'd by Detroit, Baltimore, Washington. He had 2 years in Japan. This is a journeyman. This is a guy who's really getting his opportunity, and he's making it happen. I call him the Make It Happen Mets. Another thing with the Mets, you don't have to worry too much about the bullpen when you're blowing teams out. A 9-1 win today. 6-1 win last Friday. They put up 16 on the Braves. And I've been talking about how they're not just doing it hitting the long ball. They will sacrifice bunt, timely hitting, a slap single, score two. Like, what are you seeing that's changed in the Mets lineup?
A lot of it, I think, well, one of the big things is the fact that Eric Chavez is back as the hitting coach. Mm-hmm. He was the bench coach last year, and I think a lot of hitters kind of missed his influence because he was so integral to what they were able to do in 2022. And another thing is, like, we're seeing guys play to their strengths. I don't want to see Jeff McNeil try to hit, like, 400-foot bombs. I want to see him put the ball in play because that's what he does, that he hits for average. And so when you go back to those fundamentals, kind of the see the ball, hit the ball thing that the Mets are doing well, then maybe you're not putting as much pressure on other guys in the lineup. Pete Alonso's going to hit his home runs. You mentioned they're bunting more. This sort of small ball approach works for them because they do have some speed. And it kind of just bites teams when they least expect it. There were times last season where, they would go down a run or a game would be tied, and you'd immediately be like, well, there's no way they're going to win this one. But because they're pesky, they're annoying to the other team, now you're like, okay, maybe they can come back. I was doing the math yesterday, and like during this little stretch, 38 of their runs have come in the seventh inning or later. And so that's actually more than half of the runs that they had scored have come in the seventh inning or later. And in addition to that, when they go down, they don't go down for good. Most of those games, most of these wins so far, the other team has scored first.
Yeah, you said where I was going next. We're on the phone with Laura Albanese. She's a writer-reporter for Newsday, straight out of Brooklyn College. Brooklyn, what up? You said that they come back. Mets fans can't turn the game off on the team. You can't quit on the team. You can't turn a game off where they go down 4-0 against the Braves because they're coming back. And they've done that so many times. They're like the cardiac kids, never say die. That is what you want in a team. Like, you want a team that you can watch 27 outs, 9 innings, and feel like they can make it happen. That is a team that finds a way to win in crunch time in the toughest situations. I feel like the start of the season, we judge the book by its cover. You're a writer. You're college educated. You can't judge a book by its cover. Where do you think this book is going for the Mets? Do you think that they can be a postseason team? I know it's early. The cover was just the first two series.
I mean, I even said it before the season. I think if they get, like, the real J.D. Martinez into this lineup and his back is okay and he can hit, I think he could be a really big factor. If they get Kodai Senga back, this is a legitimate wild card team. You know, I don't think they're going to be catching up with the Braves. But also, the baseball season is long, and it's weird, and stranger things have happened. I do think they have the talent to eke into the wild card. But more than that, I think, like, if they're in play, obviously, during the trade deadline, I think David Stearns has proven he has the ability to make the right acquisitions to kind of put them over the edge. When I saw this team in the first week of the season, I think, like most people, were like, well, you know, this is going to be a long year. But it was just too early and too soon. And I think a lot of that has to do with everyone remembering 2023 and going in with so much optimism. And then, you know, by the time the trade deadline comes along, goodbye Max Scherzer, goodbye Justin Verlander, you know, we're going to overhaul this entire thing. And you have David Stern saying, well, we hope to be competitive in 2024, which, you know, as much as a rebuild is good and necessary, you can't really rebuild in New York. The fans don't like it. It doesn't play here. So they have to be really strategic with how they retooled their roster.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you, you know, speaking of New York and fans in New York, what do you make of the attendance, the quote-unquote low numbers, not over 20,000 at most of the games? And obviously Doc Gooden's ceremony drew just a little bit over 30,000. I feel like there's a lot of conversation online and on The Fan about, you know, the fans not coming out to support the Mets early on this season.
Yeah, I've definitely seen indication of that. I think there's a few things at play. There is things like the weather in April has been horrible. There wasn't the same enthusiasm as last year. I think fans really got burned last year because they thought this was going to be the year when, you know, Steve Cohen opened up his pocketbook and he was like, all right, we're gonna make it rain. We're gonna get all these players. World Series or bust, and it was a bust. So I think that's definitely a thing. And, you know, I think as good as this run has been, they still have a lot to prove. In addition to that, you know, they don't really have the kind of marquee stars that they have had in the past. I mean, you would remember like DeGrom Day, and people would come out in droves because you want to see Jacob DeGrom pitch. And yeah, of course they have Pete Alonso, and yeah, of course they have Francisco Lindor. And these are guys that, you know, put butts in the seats, but it's not quite the same as firepower, star power, I would say, that they've had in previous years.
Another thing, as we watch the Mets head out to L.A. to face the Dodgers, the Dodgers and Mets series is always entertaining, but the Dodgers aren't as almighty as everyone thought. So you just spoke about how, you know, fans thought that the Mets were going to spend. Well, the Dodgers go out and spend a record amount. They just lost to the Mets division rival, the Nationals, back-to-back games. The Nationals take that series in Dodger Stadium. And before that, the Padres, who had, you know, just as high of a payroll almost as the Mets last year, the Padres, who traded pieces away, including Juan Soto, they were able to take two from the Dodgers. The Dodgers have lost four of their last five games, and I think this is a perfect setup for the Mets to go in there and take a series. How do you feel about the Mets going to face the almighty Dodgers this weekend?
I mean, you want to do it in the situation that the Mets are in right now. They have a lot of confidence. They're going into enemy territory. This could be like a show me type of series. This is the type of series where, you know, they're lined up to face Yoshinobu Yamamoto, you know, the guy that got away. And the Dodgers, you know, there's the indication of, like, you can't predict baseball, Susan. You have this team of superstars, but it's such a quirky sport, and I think it's a really unique sport, in that you cannot, and the Mets have proven this, you cannot buy your way into a championship. Do I think the Dodgers are going to stay bad? Absolutely not. No, I think they're a very good team. They're too talented to not do well this season. But I do. I don't necessarily think that they're going to blow everybody away in the way that people predicted.
Last thing for you. I know you cover the Yankees, too. I see you sometimes on Yes Network in the background of the shots. Any word on the Yanks? Anything to add about the other team in New York?
I mean, I haven't covered them in the last couple of days because I've been on Mets duty. But, you know, the one thing I do love is when both teams are clicking. You know, the Yankees obviously have that never-say-die attitude. They're getting contributions from all over the lineup. And, you know, it's so far been a really promising season. There is nothing like the electricity at Yankee Stadium when Juan Soto comes up to bat. What we're seeing from Anthony Volpe, obviously, you know, Aaron Judge is going to be Aaron Judge no matter what. And it's the type of thing that can really grip a city. I'm excited to see where this season's going to go.
Yeah, the Yankees were in Toronto, so when they come back home this weekend, will you be there Saturday for John Sterling's ceremony?
This is so lame of me. I wanted to, because I love John, I wanted to go so bad, but real talk, I had to use my comp time before it expired, so I had to take Saturday off.
Understandable. I'm trying to scroll back to find your tweet about John. Can you quickly tell us the story that you tweeted about with John Sterling? I literally laughed out loud because I know John, and that's such a John thing to do.
So good. It was so, so good. So it was a couple of years ago, and like I get kind of nervous on radio and on TV, but I was especially nervous when I was way younger. And we had Newsday had these like fourth inning spots where you'd go in the booth with John and Susan, and I was always sweating it. I thought I was going to say something stupid. I thought I was going to mess something up. Yeah, I think that's just natural. And he would always, like, calm me down and help me out. And then one day I was on the radio, and he's like, well, have you heard the song Laura? And I'm like, no, I haven't. It's from this murder mystery and named Laura. And he starts singing it to me on the radio. I'm like, this is incredible. So I go home, whatever, and a couple days later I get a call from the clerk in my office. And he's like, there's this guy who keeps calling and keeps saying, you know, like he's John Sterling. And he sounds like John Sterling. Why would John Sterling be calling the office? So I work remotely. And eventually, I guess John calls back. They give him my cell phone number. He leaves a voicemail. And it's like, Laura, I've been looking for you everywhere. I wanted to let you know that the movie Laura is playing on PBS tonight at 9:30. I was dying.
Because John is still in the like 70s. You can't text him. He uses phones, landlines.
Yes. It was so great. I saved the voicemail. I emailed it to myself so I would never lose it. I'm like, this is so incredible.
I've been searching for you everywhere via telephone. And
landline. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I'm never going to forget this story for the rest of my life. But it's just an indication of how like considerate, thoughtful he is.
Yeah,
that he didn't know me that well, but he still did went through all these hoops just so I could watch Laura on PBS.
It meant something to him. That's great. Laura, you're great. Everyone, this is Laura Albanese. You can find her on Twitter at Albanese Laura. She writes for the Mets and the Yankees, covering baseball for Newsday. Thank you for joining us tonight. That was awesome.
Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you did a good job. You didn't say anything stupid, I promise.
Maybe next time.
All right, bye. We'll talk soon. 877-337-6666. Let's open it back up for your calls on the Mets, on the Yankees. And the second half is underway. It's 51-39 Miami Heat over the Sixers. I've already proclaimed the Sixers as dead, cooked. You can't spell Philly without two L's. Choke artists, the city of brotherly choke artists. And B gone cry in the car. It's just what they do. They lose the Super Bowl. They lose the World Series. They go up against the Diamondbacks in the NLCS. They choke that away. Now Embiid misses half the season after winning MVP last year. And I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Let's see how the Heat culture plays in this second half. Keith McPherson on the Fan. KM to AM. Call me up and join the show before Johnny Lazarus at 9:15. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I was really mad last night when I text Dave. I'm like, I can't do it. I can't stop coughing. Like, it is the most frustrating thing. And if you heard my show, Monday night, I was on the cough button the whole time. Like, I wasn't sick where I couldn't do things. Like, I still took care of my son. I still cleaned the house. I still answered emails and calls and put my show together yesterday. But by the time the night came, you know, sometimes the night falls and your symptoms get worse. And it got worse and worse. It got to the point where I'm like, for everyone, not just me, I have to call out. I have to take one for the team here. And I think Paul Rosenberg got the opportunity to come on. I didn't catch his show. I literally went to sleep. As soon as the Yankees lost last night, I was like, all right, I'm out. But then I drank a ton of NyQuil, Robitussin. I even took Benadryl because I'm like, maybe it's allergy related. But I'm all right. I'm a little better now. The thing that sucks about being sick too, when you're down, like when I just felt run down, and it happens because I do the show till 2 a.m. Once baseball starts, a lot of nights getting out of the city, I don't get home until 3. One night I didn't get home until 4 because the traffic, they close the Holland Tunnel and everybody is forcing their way through the Lincoln Tunnel and it is literally impossible to get out. There's a cough. So you know I'm not faking it. Some nights I just don't get home in time to get the proper sleep. My son is going to be yelling and screaming by 7 a.m. regardless, and I live in an apartment, and there's no way to avoid that. I'm not complaining. I'm just giving you a behind the scenes, like a little pull back of the curtain of what I do when I'm not here. And shout out to my son on the other side of 1 year old and my wife taking care of him, you know, as I pass off, and she comes home from work and takes care of him through the night. But, yeah, I just got a little bit run down, and with the weather, like it's cool to get a 75-degree day. But it's back and forth where you don't know whether you need a heavy jacket. You don't know if you need a hoodie, if you wear a T-shirt. You say you want to take the garbage out and don't want to put all your stuff on. So, like, that's where I'm at. And it just got up under me, man. It got under me. I do not want to miss a show. I do not want to take a day off during baseball season, during any season, especially this season right now. Like, it's the most wonderful time. We've got play-in, soon-to-be playoff basketball. We've got Stanley Cup playoffs loading. We got NFL draft loading. I'm trying to be on, and I'm trying to take calls and connect with you guys. 877-337-6666. But, yeah, I was saying, like, it sucks when you're sick. You can't lift. I can't get the, like, same lift that I want. I start lifting, and I just stop. I'm doing some push-ups in here like Tiki Barber does. I'm trying to be jacked by the time we have the kickoff to summer down at DJ's, where I'm from, down there in Monmouth County. And I'll probably be the most jacked host on the fan. I'll probably be the most in shape. Yes, even more in shape than Tiki Barber. I'll be close. I'm younger than Tiki. You know, Tiki and I are the only two hosts to play college football in Virginia. A little stat for you guys right there. Let's go to the phones. Talk about the NFL draft and whatnot. Bob is up in Vermont. What's up, Bob? You got it.
Hey, Keith. I haven't talked to you since last year. I remember when you were becoming a DAC graduation.
I can't say that again, Bob. You're breaking up a little bit.
Remember last year I called you before you had your baby.
Okay, we just got to put Bob on hold. He was coming through like Johnny Five. That's a Wash reference. I used to watch that with my brother, though. My brother's 10 years older than me, so my brother put me on to like the 80s movies. You know, shout out to Johnny Five. I used to like watching Johnny Five. I forget was the movie called Johnny Five. People don't know what I'm talking about. The young boys don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's see if we can get Bob. Oh, it's called Short Circuit, 1986. It's Short Circuit and Short Circuit 2. Short Circuit 2 was made when I was born. There's no way I'm watching that unless I'm watching that with Big Bro. All right, let's go back to Bob in Vermont. Go again, B.O.B.
Sorry.
You got it.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, what do you think the Jets and Giants will do on the draft, your choices? And also, do you ever hear of a player from college called Kanobu?
Kanobu? From what school?
College.
Yeah, but what college?
It's just college. Do you ever hear that guy's name?
No, I've never heard of Kanobu from college. What
no,
position?
Kanobu.
Kanobu from college? What position does he play?
He plays offense and defense.
He plays offense and defense? He's a two-way guy?
Yep, that's what he said.
How do you spell the last name?
Knoebel. I can't remember how you spell it. It starts with K, I know that.
Okay, because I'm spelling it wrong on Google.
Knoebel. But I want to congratulations on you being a dad.
Thanks. It's the best thing to ever happen to me.
My daughter's
going to
be 18 in July.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. And I mean that. But guys, I made it through year one, and it was a challenge.
It's hard when they're babies, you know. They have to speak.
He can't really talk. Yeah, he's babbling. But congrats to you, and I hope you are well and your daughter is well. Thanks for the call, Bob. I do not know who Knoebel is. Maybe somebody listening knows of a player, a two-way player coming out of college, any college, that gives you like 300 options. I'm looking at Zoo. He's just laughing. I'm trying to find out. A two-way player? Plays offense and defense?
Everybody just got put on alert. That's all I know.
Knoebel is coming. I know Travis Hunter. You guys know Travis Hunter, right? From the Colorado Buffaloes. That's the best two-way player in the country. And I saw a post today. He's a 4.0 student. I was like, I didn't know Travis was like that. To be a two-way player, play cornerback and receiver, and be a 4.0 student in college? Unheard of. Not real. But I don't want to take anything from the brother. Maybe he's like that. But the guys that I went to college with, they barely went to class. We used to have coaches waiting outside classrooms doing attendance check because guys never went to class. Who do I think the Jets and Giants are going to draft? We started off with the Jets already, and I'm down to have these conversations. The draft is coming. I know we got to talk Yankees, Mets, and Knicks, and Rangers, and Isles, but I'm down to talk football in the draft. I don't know who's going to draft Knoebel, but the Jets shouldn't take him. At number 10, Brock Bowers is a sexy pick. Brock Bowers is a luxury pick. Brock Bowers is not a necessity, not something you need. I also want to add this. I've said this a bunch of times. Look at Sam Laporta, who the Lions drafted. He was the best rookie tight end and one of the best tight ends, arguably, you know, outside of like Travis Kelce and some of these guys, arguably the best tight end in the league. And everybody's talking about, oh, Dalton Kincaid coming out of Utah. And the Bills took him, and they already had Dawson Knox. I guess it helped their offense, but did it put their offense over the top? Did the Bills have a great season? Did Dalton Kincaid tear up the league, adding that weapon to Josh Allen's? No. That's a reach. You don't need to draft tight ends at 10. Look at the Falcons. They drafted Kyle Pitts, and I know, between their head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback situation, didn't work out. But I think it's two ways you go here. You're obviously going offense if you're the Jets. You need to have plan A, B, C, and D to protect that man, that bad man, Aaron Rodgers. So I would take a tackle. And I know it might not be as sexy as a Brock Bowers, especially because you signed Tyron Smith. Didn't Aaron Rodgers say he's going to play for four more seasons? Tyron Smith is only signed for one more season. You got to have a guy waiting in the wings. And there's some good time. You might say Joe Alt drops. Are you going to pass on a Joe Alt? You know, I think the kid Fashanu out of Penn State, he seems like a surefire guy. Taliese Fuanga, if that's who you like. So I think it's tackle. But if you really want to please Aaron Rodgers, you also can have an insurance play for Mike Williams and take the best available wide receiver. Where you might even be able to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers or whoever if the Giants actually bump up to four and the first four picks go to quarterbacks. That's going to leave the three top receivers open where you take one. You take one. And then it's Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, and that rookie receiver as your top three receivers. And even if you have to bring him along and he's not ready to go, you have enough depth at wide receiver for the Jets. So that's what I think the Jets should do. And oh, no, would you look at this? Did I speak too soon? No, I still don't think I spoke too soon. It's just a little bit of a run. They have a pulse. It's 61-59. They're only down a bucket. Clap your hands, everybody, for Philadelphia. They have some life. The Sixers are not dead yet. With 4:15 left in the third quarter, they went on a little run here. Let's see if the Heat stand back up. But I think the Giants would be crazy to move up to trade, move up in the draft to get J.J. McCarthy. I think it's a reach. I think it's a stretch. I think it's smoke and mirrors as well. If I'm Joe Shane or Brian Daboll, I'm telling everybody, yeah, love the kid. Great pro day, great meeting with them. That's the kind of guy I can work with. Yup. So a little bit of, I would tell everybody we're taking J.J. McCarthy. And when they think you're going left, you go right. The Giants should add the best wide receiver they can add. And I've been on record saying the wide receiver is only as good as the quarterback. But you already know what you're doing at quarterback. You have Daniel Jones. You have Drew Lock. Maybe you have Tommy Cutlets. Hey, Tommy. Man, get an explosive wide receiver. Whether it is, like, I would fake out the Cardinals. Okay, you're going to let us trade up to get J.J. McCarthy? Psych, we're taking Marvin Harrison Jr. 877-337-6666. 2 hours down. And a lot more to do. Keith McPherson on the fan. Call me up if you'd like to speak on the show. We'll be right back.